Senate Finance will come to order. Senator Hoffman, Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, Co-Chair Wilken, and myself, Senator Green, are here. The other members will be with us presently. They're in committees. And we have two things on the agenda today, Senate Bill 54 and House Bill 217. As reminders, all cell phones and pagers should be turned off. And nice uninterrupted meeting. Anything for the good of the order, Senator Wilken?
Oh, ma'am. Thank you.
Welcome, Senator Olson.
Good morning, Chairman.
And on Senate Bill 54, Jason, you want to come up and kind of guide us through the CS that we have?
Yes, ma'am. Jason Hooley, staff to Senator Dyson. The B version makes two small changes. The first is located in the title. We added the words "and sexual abuse" on line two.
Line two.
Yes, ma'am. And the other change is located in section three of the new version B. That was a small suggestion from the Department of Public Safety to move language where we tell them to enter the protective orders into the registry.
Could you give me the reference?
Yes, ma'am. In version
page and line.
In version B.
Mm-hmm.
It is page 2, lines 19 through 24 is the section.
And the only way you would see the change is if you went back to the previous version?
Yes, ma'am. And that is version N on page 4, lines 19 and 20. We haven't given them any additional responsibilities. We've just moved the directive to enter the protective order into the registry into another section that they already currently have procedures outlining.
Okay, walk me through this. I'm somehow getting...
Sure. They outline the rationale in their physical note, the State Affairs physical note from Department of Public Safety. It's number four, physical note number four.
Okay, so they have added language about a peace officer. Is that correct?
We have taken it from one section and moved it to another section of current statute.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In version N, the previous version, we had added a new provision that they must enter the protective order into the registry.
Mm-hmm.
They suggested that instead of adding a new provision, we would instead insert that into a current statute that's already there, that they already have regulations and procedures regarding domestic violence orders, for instance.
Are there any questions? Okay. So we have those two changes. And by the way, the reason I wanted Jason to discuss that is because we did not make the change in committee, but it was at the recommendation of the drafter that that change be made. Senator Wilken, do you want to move version B?
Madam Chair, I would move that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 54 Finance version B, dated January 20th of 06, be adopted as our working document.
Okay. Is there objection? Is there discussion? Senator Stedman, version B is adopted. Senator Stedman.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify for the record. Apparently, there's some confusion over with some people, particularly some people in the audience in this room at the last meeting. When we start discussing this item and we're dealing with protective orders, and the inability that apparently the current statutes have, that we have situations in which women have had protective orders and they end up dead. And in one particular case, it happened within a matter of a few hours when a particular person happened to get out of incarceration. And the issue I have with the current protective order statutes. I don't think they have enough teeth in them. And we need to deal with that issue that's been expressed, not only Senator Dyson, but I've also worked with Senator Guess on this particular issue. And I think it's happened in my Senate district twice in the last 3 years. So if there's anybody in the around the state that thinks the current statutes work, I got two deceased women in my district that say they don't work. And I really take personal offense to mischaracterization that some people have made that Senator Stedman feels that these restraining orders are too restrictive. It's actually just the opposite. And I would appreciate the information that's delivered out of this room, particularly the folks that sit in the audience that happen to work for particular individuals, be a little more accurate in their transfer of information from this table into the public.
Thank you.
That's all, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I don't understand the situation that you're referring to, but it is really naive to think that a protective order puts a guard at the door of a victim. You know, it does not, unfortunately. Protective orders give another legal tool for contempt of the of a protective order. Does allow for arrest and so on, but it does not protect the victim from the perpetrator showing up at their door or confronting them in a parking lot or whatever. And citizens should not think that just because they've got a protective order, they're safe. And, but the one of the loopholes we've got to make sure is always closed, and that is that the victim always is notified in real time, before the conditions of restraint of the alleged perpetrator are changed. So if the perpetrator is going to get out of jail or comes back into the state or whatever, the victim needs to know that, and has a right to know that, and I believe we have required that, and that it breaks down in execution, as far as I know, not in the lack of our statutes being clear about that. Senator Stedman raises a really valid point. A protective order in and of itself does does nothing in the real world, real time, to protect a victim from physical violence and or harassment. But it does give them a tool, if they blow the whistle, that law enforcement can act quite decisively. And I really appreciate the concern.
Thank you. Are there other questions? And in reviewing the fiscal notes, they're all zero fiscal notes. And you have updated the information about this legislation so that when it goes to the floor, we'll have the updated sponsor statement and the sectional analysis, and that's in your file, gentlemen. Are there any other questions? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, move to report Senate Bill 54 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
There being no objection, Senate Bill 54 moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
I just want to say thanks to the committee for the very good work on this bill.
Thank you.
And all the administration has been quite cooperative and helping us on this. And, it's a good piece of work.
Thank you.
I appreciate the help.
Every once in a while, the system comes together. Every once in a while, the system actually works.
Yeah, and Jason deserves a lot of credit for he did marvelous work on this.
Okay, House Bill 217. We had asked for some more information to be brought to us and a little more discussion for some of the concerns around the table. Pete, how should we proceed?
Thank you, Madam.
I know we have Steve Van Zandt on the line, and then Eddie Jeans is in the room, so.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pete Bauman, staff for Representative Harris. Today, we're here for further discussion on House Bill 217, and like you've indicated, we have Eddie Jeans and Steve Van Zandt. Also, Dan Bockhorst is in the building, and he hopes to get up here to answer questions if he gets done in the committee he's in.
He's with Local Boundary Commission?
I'm sorry?
Is he with the Local Boundary Commission?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Having said that, just briefly, House Bill 217 is a bill that will provide choice to communities when they're forming a borough. That choice being that if there is a pipeline property or gas property in the proposed borough boundaries, that value can be excluded from the overall value of the proposed borough. This would enable proposed boroughs to find other ways to fund a borough that doesn't include property tax. They could use utility taxes or fuel taxes or whatever they may choose in order to come up with funding for their borough. Having said that, Madam Chairman, I'm willing to try to answer questions, but Steve Van Zandt has sent us and included a new graph. It's a little color one. This should be in the package. And also a full and true value determination, which he's prepared to go over step by step in order to give us a good understanding of mill rates and how the tax system works.
That's a pretty high bar. Have us understand it when it's all over.
I agree, Madam Chairman. For myself.
I know. I'm sure I knew that's what you meant.
I apologize.
Steve, are you online?
Madam Chair, I am.
Welcome. What can you offer us an explanation of this system that will help us understand what we're doing here?
Madam Chair, first thing I'll do is try to give a real quick overview of what the full value determination is. And basically, a full value determination is a tool that we use to compare municipalities. It compares the wealth of a municipality based on property values. You have several municipalities in the state, we have 16 boroughs, only 12 of which levy a property tax. And I want to pick on just two or three right now. The Fairbanks North Star Borough does not levy a property tax against personal property, and yet the municipality of Anchorage does. And so when we go to compare them, we have to make sure that we're comparing apples and apples and not apples and oranges. Fairbanks has exempted personal property. They've also exempted the first $20,000 of residential property. Anchorage has now exempted the first $20,000 of residential property. Some of them haven't. The Mat-Su Borough, as you are probably well aware, Madam Chairman, has exempted up to $250,000 of business inventory, and they've exempted all business equipment, but Anchorage hasn't. So what we do in the full value is we take the total value of a municipality that could be taxed should they decide to levy a property tax. We determine what that value is, and then we can compare them. It's like comparing apples and apples instead of apples to oranges. So each municipality is given a full value based on the full value of all the taxable property within their boundaries. So when we do that, then the school funding uses the formula of basically what we call a 4-mill equivalency for the local contribution. And that's the minimum they're required to pay for school funding. On the one sheet I've given you called the explanation of 4-mill equivalency, the top part just basically shows you what a mill is. A mill is 1/1000th of a dollar. So for a value of $1,000, you'd have a local contribution of $4. You go down there $100 million, you'd have a local contribution of $400,000. So the bottom part gets into the proposed Deltona Borough. You can see that the local property is about $182 million. We have the Pogo Mine, which at the time we did the full value last year, it would have been about $125 million. That number will increase because the mine's about done, so that'll probably double. And then we have the what we call AS-4356, which is oil and gas property. That's the pipeline and the pump station, at $194.5 million. Now, over to the right of that shows you how we come up with a mandatory education contribution. The delta part, the local part, of 182 million times 4 meals gives us about $728,000, the minimum that they're required to put in education on that portion. The Pogo mine, at $125 million at 4 meals, equates to a $500,000 education contribution. So that gives us a total of about $1.2 million. Now, if we drop down to the pipeline, you can see that based on the $194.5 million, if they're required to contribute 4 mills to that, that's $778,000 that they'll actually be taking out of the state pocket already. Right now, the state levies a 20 mill tax to all oil and gas property. So off the $194.5 million, the state right now gets about $3.9 million. If we include that value in their full value, then the local borough, the Deltona borough, would take a minimum of $778,000 of that out of that $3.9 million that the state already gets just to pay the education if they levy the property tax. If they don't levy a property tax, they're going to have to come up with some way to cover that $778,000. And that's difficult to do if you're talking about a sales tax or a utility tax or whatever it may be. So it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense when we're talking about what we call centrally assessed property. That's property assessed by the state of Alaska. And in this case, the state is already getting tax dollars off of it. So if we exclude that from it, if they don't levy a property tax, from our point of view, it's a wash because they don't have to include it in their full value. They don't have to come up with the money, and they're not going to be taking any out of the state pots. So you can see that the total dollar amount, if we include the pipeline, is $2 million. Where if we don't include the pipeline, it's $1.2 million. Even if the Pogo mine goes up, that's still all local dollars they'll have to come up with. So in a nutshell, that's a basic explanation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, are there any questions? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morning, Steve. Yesterday we were having a discussion about the bill, and the subject came up, and I remember discussing it a couple of years ago when this amendment was offered to the House, but we started to walk through and kind of refresh our memories. And it has to do with if an area, the four boroughs or don't have a property tax, and there's some, I think, some first-class cities that don't have a property tax. You know, from your white paper that we have here, in the third paragraph, it talks about the full value equalizes the values in all municipalities and by measuring their local wealth. And we do that in my borough, and I think everybody here at the table, except maybe Senator Hoffman, but. We have a system in place that measures our wealth increase or decrease through the market, and we're valued, and our 4 mil is automatically increased or decreased every year by that. And so that's 12 boroughs, but those four that don't have, we don't come back and visit those four. We don't have a mechanism in place to determine the increase or the decrease in their assessed value. And I'm wondering, this may be a bill that we want to put in place some system to do that so that they aren't, in essence, set off to the side and not visited on a regular basis. So as their wealth grows, so does their 4 mil requirement. Would you talk a little bit about that? Is that something that we perhaps want to do? And I think the committee has some work that Sheila did last night, and it shows those four and their assessed values since full and true values, it shows their 4 mil requirement, which of course is a direct calculation from the full and true value since 1995. That's the one chart. The other one is the first class cities that have elected not to have a property tax. And you can see that that in many cases from 1995, the last 11 or 12 years, their assessed value has remained flat. So perhaps this is the time to put in place a system that we look at those that have chosen not to have a property tax and ask the state assessor to go and visit those areas, just as you did, Steve, with your good work at Delta, to come up with some way to fairly calculate their school contribution and their contribution to government. I'd be interested in your thoughts if this is the place to do that.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkins. Yes, sir, you're correct. I'm, as you well know, I'm a one-man office, and it's difficult to get around in the state. So right now I'm working on the Lake and Pan Borough, trying to come up with values on it. We're building models on different categories of properties. And it's, you know, it's just impossible for one person to get around the state to all these places with providing education for existing boroughs and doing full values in cities and boroughs. I put in this year for another position, and it didn't make it through the budget process. So I would love to have the legislature say, yes, we want more emphasis put on this full value, because we do have basically 95 cities and boroughs total that we have to do a full value on. Luckily, as in your borough, Senator Wilkins, we have a local assessor's office that does the majority of the work, and there's not that much for me to do in those areas, except to provide the training. So the other areas, like the Deltana proposed borough and the Lake and Pan, the Aleutians East, Northwest Arctic, they are difficult to get to and get around on a sequential basis. So I guess it's just a lack of funding for my office is what's keeping us from doing it. So that's the best answer I can give you, sir.
Hey, thank you, Steve. Could I ask you how many, an estimate, high, low, or an exact accounting, if you have it, how many hours did you put into your work to come up with your Deltana Borough assessment that we have here in front of us?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkins, as I recall, we had 800 man hours in the field. And then I don't know how many we did in the office.
So to be, it would be fair to say you had somewhere between a third and a half of a man year involved in that effort?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkins. Yes, sir. Remember, we started that one from scratch. We had nothing to start with on that one. And in fact, some of the others we don't have a whole lot on, so we're trying to build our files on those. So, yes, sir.
Thank you, Stephen. Madam Chair, I think one of the most interesting books that we get every year is Alaska Taxable, and I'm embarrassed I don't have it in front of me, but that really is the guts on how this state runs their government and the way different areas have chosen through our 11 different ways of organizing to fund different governments. And it's really kind of fascinating for a state of 640,000 people how we've been creative to fund our local needs. And I've always been impressed since I got involved in this, almost from the first few days I've been in the legislature, with Steve's work. It's been really good work. It's been difficult work. But it's been work that I know I rely on. And folks that have tried to take a pot shot at what he's done have come up unsuccessful. So I'm not so sure, Madam Chair. I like this bill, it's a good bill, but we may want to have a discussion about whether this is the time that we, as Mr. Van Zandt has asked, that we may up the profile of how we ascertain the value so that all of Alaskans are paying their fair share towards education. So I'd ask that maybe you and I and others would have that discussion in the next few days and then move this bill along. But I think it's an important discussion, and this is really an opportune time to perhaps change policy, and God knows we're adding people around here. This may be one that really is deserved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then certainly would revise the fiscal notes.
Yes.
And require more personnel to follow through on something like that. Well, perhaps in the next week or so, we can talk with the sponsor and again with Steve and with Eddie Jeans if we need to, and find out where we need to head. And if there's a possibility to do something that leads us a little better.
Well, and maybe we can just ask Steve, could you help Senator Green and myself and the committee just come up with what you think would be an appropriate fiscal note for us just to look at? It doesn't have to be formal. If we think we can take it, then we'd ask you to formalize it.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkins, I'd be happy to.
Would that be okay, Madam Chair?
That's fine, yeah.
And would you like me to work on that and then bring that to
please
you?
Like you.
Okay, Steve. So, Sheila, you and I will work on that, and we'll bring the proposal to the co-chair and see how she likes it. And if it looks like it passes muster, then we'll just do informally to the committee. And if the committee likes it, then we can bring it back formally and see how it works. And maybe then think about a mechanism, Steve, that would allow you to do this over the next few years to tighten this up and make it a real full and true value across the state.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkins, we get back with you on that. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Stedman.
Yes, Madam Chair, just as a kind of a note to the worksheet here showing the six first-class cities and their valuations on. Even though these two communities aren't in my district, they are alongside at Heidelberg and Cake. And Heidelberg, reasonable chance that Heidelberg is going to cease existence in the future due to a drop in population and no economic base. Cake's population has dropped about a third. So both those communities are in severe trouble, Heidelberg being more trouble than Cake. But clearly when you drop these small villages, when you start seeing population drops like that, just because of no economic base, just want to kind of factor that in this whole discussion of...
Changes the landscape, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Well, I'd just like to make another quick note.
Go right ahead.
And particularly Cake's been there for a substantially long time, in excess of 1,000 years, I think. And I don't know how long Heidelberg's been around, but probably been around a long time also.
Yeah, Pete, has any of this been part of the conversation up to this point? Senator Wilkins' suggestions, have they at any point been a part of the conversation in this bill?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, I know there's some concerns have been raised, so we will continue to work on this and see what we find to go forward with it. And then we'll certainly keep you involved in your office. And if anyone has questions or wants information or needs more, let me know. And Senator Wilkin and I will respond. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and good morning, Steve, one of the questions I have, and I guess I got kind of confused on it, you referred to a number of municipalities or boroughs that either exempted property tax or had a significant portion of it exempted. You mentioned that Fairbanks had no personal property tax. Is that true?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that is true, sir.
No personal property tax in Fairbanks.
Through the chair, yes, sir. Fairbanks has no personal property tax. Also, the city of Valdez has no personal property tax other than a tanker tax.
I guess the confusion that I have, you also made a statement that the first $20,000 of residential property was exempted as well. I guess I'm confused between those two.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. Under Alaska Statute 2945050, there are a list of several what we call optional exemptions, which a municipality may authorize. One of them is up to $20,000 of residential property can be exempt. We have several communities now that have done that. Fairbanks, Valdez, North Slope, Anchorage, Kenai, off the top of my head, I think that's it. And Bristol Bayboro have all opted into that. where they exempt the first 20, up to the first $20,000 of residential property. That's authorized under optional exemption, sir.
The last question I have, Madam Chairman, is actually to the sponsor. On the 217, what has been the local input of people from the Delta Greeley area related to this bill? Or why, I guess, why are we not hearing, if there is either people that are really for it or really against it, why are we not hearing local input that are either calling in on this bill or showing their support or lack of support?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, this has been an issue for 2 years. Lots of public support. Delta Junction's a community that's fairly split on the issue of boroughs. We had a borough charter commission who put forth a proposed charter. There's been lots of discussion on House Bill 217. House Bill 217 is really an issue of choice. It doesn't force anything, doesn't mandate anything. It just allows a choice to take the pipeline property out of a proposed borough funding mechanism. And so people who are against the borough really, you know, don't really care because it's a matter of choice. People who are for the borough, they have weighed in. We had the city administrator testified the last time in favor of it, and he was representing a lot of people in the Delta area.
If I could just ask one additional question, Madam Chairman. So you're saying that it's roughly a 50-50 split, 60-40 split, or in which way are they favored?
Through the chair, it's really 50-50, but I will point out that within our little community of Delta has changed a lot in the last few years with the advent of the anti-ballistic missile site. But I think we're still, really, it's a 50-50 split in the Delta area when it comes to whether we want to have a borough or not have a borough.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so the record is clear, Senator Olson, Fairbanks doesn't have a borough doesn't have a personal property tax. We do have a real property tax. And the $20,000 is off the real property.
Okay. And that's for the municipality or the borough?
Borough. Or both. But.
Hey, James, do you have anything that you can offer on this? Okay, thank you. Well, we will hold this and continue work on it and see what we can come up with. Are there any announcements? Anything
thank
for
you.
The good of the order? Senate Finance is adjourned.